You're listening to The Word from Westwood, a series of podcasts featuring sermons preached at Westwood United Methodist Church in Los Angeles, California.
Well, friends, today I count this as a benchmark day. So what am I talking about? It marks 10 years that we've been together here at Westwood as of today. And I'm looking forward to starting our 11th year together next week. I have to say I am a much different pastor on many levels from the guy who showed up in this pulpit in 2006. Thank you for being so patient. If nothing else, the refocus of my ministry, which went from being a Christian education, youth ministry, family ministry person, to becoming a preacher and pastor in charge, as the district superintendent calls it, it's been made much easier because of your patience, but also because of your belief in what we are here to do together, and also because of your wise counsel over these last years. And so I have a big thank you to share with you and look forward to what will happen in the time to come. I believe we are also a different congregation in our attitude and in our outlook. One of the strengths of this congregation is that it is a place that is filled with dynamic, caring, forward-looking, generous individuals who are here with a purpose to grow in faith and to live out that faith in the world. You have all taught me much. One of the things of which I am constantly reminded is that we can be so often to proclaim the statement, the church is of God and will be preserved to the end of time. And when I think about that, nowhere in that does it say we are called to be a static institution. In many respects, friends, this place that we inhabit, this church, is a living, breathing organism which has a life of its own, which is the sum of all of the individual parts that call this place home. Sometimes when we think of the church in general, the church universal, it's in great shape. Sometimes it is challenged. Sometimes the church can even lose its way. The amazing thing is, in spite of that, God never gives up on us. By grace and by the presence of the Holy Spirit, we are given more second chances than we might ever deserve. It is because of that the faith community has this ability to continually reinvent itself, offering people the opportunity to be part of what is truly a different kind of family. Paul knew this. Paul understood this. And the time we've spent these last weeks reflecting on Paul's letters to the Corinthian church, it's reminded us of those challenges which are a part of being in this beloved community. If I've learned nothing else in ministry, it is that the church is a very human institution, and it is completely reflective of all of our personal weaknesses as well as our strengths. Yes, God's Spirit is indeed here, moving among us. But we have the ability to make choices about which path we will take. Paul had a real heart for the Corinthian church. It was one of his babies, so to speak. It was a gathering of a flock who did things well, and a flock that also had its challenges. And those challenges at some points were going to be capable of pulling this community apart. To state it simply, growing up as individuals or as the church is messy business. There are growing pains, and that's what we've called this series on the Corinthian church. There are growing pains which manifest themselves in a variety of ways. Sometimes it feels like many steps are being taken backwards, just as many as there are steps being taken forward. And that certainly, friends, was the case for the church in Corinth. Above all else, Paul wanted this early band of followers, these followers of Jesus, to operate out of love. In his viewpoint, Christ's sacrifice was a big price to be paid in order for there to be reconciliation with God. He saw this very fact as something that should be a motivator, a strong motivator for the kind of behavior that he hoped would be demonstrated by the Corinthian church. At least that was his hope. We also know the reality of statements made such as, after everything that's been done for you. Well, they really don't do a very good job of motivating us, do they? They do very little to change our behavior. And Paul was quick to give those kinds of statements. And so in that respect, Paul perhaps was not as educated in human nature as he might have been. We know, and we've talked about before, how his relationship with the church in Corinth had soured over time. And that really shouldn't come as any surprise. Relationships change as people change. If the relationship of a child to a parent does not change and morph, it will never be healthy. I sometimes wonder if Paul really understood that in relation to the church. What do you think? In his typical fashion, the passage which was read this morning is another one of those corrective passages about the kind of behavior that he hoped the Corinthians, who were a part of this young church, would exhibit. Now, he was specifically today talking about the lack of or their practice of generosity. He felt generosity was a real hallmark of any congregation. So he starts out by talking about the Macedonian churches, and those churches that he was talking about are probably what is part of modern-day Greece, places up to the north. You might remember that there was a church in Thessalonica and a church in Philippi. Well, Paul, in speaking to the Corinthians, made note about these particular churches and the people who filled them. And he told the Corinthians that these churches were experiencing extremely hard times financially. They were poor. But Paul went on to say that even in their poverty, these places still gave as best they could. In fact, he was saying to the Corinthians that they were to be noted for their generosity that really seemed to exceed that of wealthier places. That being said, we also realize that when we look at this passage, that the support of which Paul was speaking was support for his ministry. His missionary journeys, you see, were funded by benefactors, and they were funded by churches like the one in Corinth. So the message, we have to admit, somewhat was a bit self-serving that he was sharing with the Corinthian church. Paul felt that they should be able to show the generosity of the Macedonian churches, if not more. We do also have to remember that Paul was very singularly focused on his missionary activity and on his call to be bringing into the fold new believers and starting new churches. In fairness to him, the money he received did not make him a wealthy man. It enabled him instead to share the good news of Christ in faraway places and start in motion the rise of Christianity in the midst of the Roman Empire. So we really can't let cynicism take over, because Paul really did work to move beyond trying to garner support just for his specific work. He encouraged the Corinthians to follow through on the commitments that they had made, telling them to match the eagerness with the reality of their means. He was very specific in saying to them, this generosity is all about striking a fair balance between the generosity on the one hand of helping other people, but to not put too much pressure on themselves in the process. He was pretty pragmatic when you think about it in this message that he gave. He showed us the insight into his economic understanding of the world by noting a particular writing on the subject. You might remember this passage ends with the words, "The one who had much did not have too much, and the one who had little did not have too little." Well, you see, Paul was actually quoting an instruction that was found in the book of Exodus, which spoke of how the community was to be in support of each other. It's probably safe to assume that his hope and his aspiration for the Christian church is that it was not going to be a place of economic extremes, but where people were helping each other so that they could all work together and move forward. The bottom line for Paul is that a spirit of generosity should be the aspiration, the absolute aspiration for followers of Jesus. He consistently taught of God's generosity when it came to grace and reconciliation and redemption. In a sense, God did whatever was required to restore relationship with us, even if it meant accomplishing this through the suffering, death, and resurrection of Jesus. Paul was emphatic in this notion, telling these first Christians that what God has been done for them should be acknowledged in how generous they would be with others, and that's a message that extends to us today. You see, that generosity is not just about money or sharing talent or skills. That generosity is about focusing and pointing our lives on a different kind of goal, one where it is our primary calling to impact the lives of people that are around us. It's a lot easier to talk about living lives of generosity than actually putting that into practice. We have to acknowledge that we live in challenging times for cultivating spirits of generosity. Too often it is the voices of scarcity, of fear and suspicion, who get the most airtime, whether it be in the political arena or in media outlets or even within the church. How does it not affect us, friends, when we read just in the last couple of days of a supposed preacher who tells his congregation that the tragedy in Orlando was a good thing because the people got what they deserved in his mind, and that they were evil and that they were going to corrupt others? It's hard to have a spirit of generosity when we hear things like that coming out of a church. How does it change us when loud voices tell us to be scared of people because of where they come from, because of how they act, because of how they worship? Why isn't there more outrage when all of our political leaders can get away with doing nothing, spending more time trying to block progress than working to be part of a solution, which I believe is our expectation of all our leaders? I have difficulty understanding how it is possible to rationalize being a follower of Jesus and believing that there is something to be feared around every corner. Jesus came so that we might have new life, not to look at every person as if they are a threat to our very existence. So it's appropriate to ask ourselves the question, friends, what does this mean for us? What does that mean for us, we who strive to be followers of Jesus, we who strive to be people of a generous spirit? Well, I believe that generosity for us can be lived out in a number of places. It can be lived out in the beloved community, in the way we are church together. That generosity can actually be lived out in the community beyond our doors. That generosity can also be lived out in the relationships that we cultivate with one another. So what do we mean by generosity? Well, I think the first place we're called to be generous is in the use of our time. I read a while back an article from Martin Marty where he never liked to use the words that I'm too busy, because he felt that word busy somehow conveyed a sense that what I'm doing is more important than what you are doing. And that's so much of what I experience in life, that we seem to get behind what we like to call our busyness instead of taking the time to really evaluate, how am I using my time? And is it consistent with what I feel are the goals for my life? I have one friend who likes to just fly in the face of it, and any time we ever get together, he'll address it by saying, how about if we waste some time together? And I really like that sense of wasting time. You know, that's how we think of it, is as wasting time. But in the reality, that time we spend in relationships can be some of the most valuable time we ever spend in listening, in hearing, in providing counsel, in providing comfort and guidance. You see, one of the ways we are called to be generous people is in the use of the gift of time, which we have. We're called to be generous in the use of our talents. And there are all kinds of talents here in the creative arenas. Perhaps it's teaching. Perhaps it's providing leadership for an organization. Perhaps it's writing. Perhaps it's singing. Perhaps you have a real talent for doing work out in the community, helping with boards of directors for the many nonprofit agencies that are out there that need our help and our support. Have you spent time to think about what are the talents that God has given me? And how can I use them with a spirit of generosity to benefit the church community, to benefit the world community, to benefit relationships that I have with other people? Our talents are not given to us to squeeze and hold on to tightly. They're to be shared with others. And another way we're called to be generous, friends, is with our resources. It perhaps is one of the biggest indicators of our spiritual health, our ability to be able to give support to those places that we really feel need the support. Whether it be the nonprofit for which you have a real passion, the work that perhaps is done with the homeless, the work that might be done with the mentally ill, any number of places. Perhaps it is the work, and I would hope it's the work, that we do as a faith community here. There's really no secret to how we come together as a faith community. The only reason we are here is because of the generosity of the people that sit in the pews here and the seats over in the loft. That's how we are able to be about the work of mission and ministry. We are blessed to have this relationship with Belmont Village that covers our expenses when it comes to buildings. But all of the ministry and mission that takes place happens only because of your generosity. And so that's a real question to ask ourselves as followers of Jesus. What is God calling me to in the arena of generosity, in sharing the resources that have been entrusted to me, the resources I've been given? Because in our mindset, it really is all God's. And we are simply called to be caretakers of these resources. So what are we doing with those resources? Friends, I believe God has gifted us to be able to do absolutely amazing work together. The gifts of time, of talent, and of resources are all here. The question is, what will we do with those gifts? Amen.
Westwood United Methodist Church is located at 10497 Wilshire Boulevard in Los Angeles, between Westwood Village and Beverly Hills. Sundays are at the heart of this faith community's life, and we invite you to worship every Sunday at 10 a.m. A wide variety of opportunities for all ages are also available every week. To learn more, visit us on the web at www.westwoodumc.org or call the church office at area code 310-474-4511. I'm Janet Hoskins. Westwood United Methodist Church. Do justice, love kindness, walk humbly with God.